As we come more and more into living in the present moment, and I see that the new human being is in the process of being designed, of being born, and we're not born yet. But as that happens more and more, we absolutely have to take responsibility in our imagination, in our choices, and it's becoming more and more available. I mean, I experience it daily, more and more available, that if I haven't chosen and given some attention to what I want to experience, I'm likely to revert to a default.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to the Timeline Astrology Podcast with myself, Gary O'Toole, and my guest Kishori. This is all about Rahu in Taurus. And we've reached the end of the line, in a sense, with Rahu through the signs. But of course, there is no end of the line with the zodiac. It's cyclical. And we will continue with another series. I'm going to discuss more about that at the end. But for now, let's hear from Kishori and our illuminating Dark Lord all about the sign Taurus, the most sensual and enjoyable sign of the zodiac.
It's only the level of which your mind puts the ceiling on what your experience could be, and why we're not all levitating or teleporting yet, because the realization of what we are becoming is not yet, I mean, mind doesn't open yet to the possibilities. Like in my father's house are many mansions, infinite mansions, and greater things than these you shall do. And the last of these is death. What is death? Death of the body, or the disappearance of the body. And we know that from, let's say, reading maybe even Yogananda's autobiography, that beings who are evolved can reconstitute their molecules. And like in anything in Star Trek that you can do, we can do. It's exciting. And I think for now, let's going back to looking at Taurus, that sense of comfort and satisfaction, and that you really, that's real luxury to be able to relax into it all, into the moment, like you're saying. So you can taste a raspberry fully and ecstatic. This is what I would call, I suppose, ecstatic living. Just being wow, wow, all the time. And, you know, Rahu is our beloved opponent. He's bringing us back to our possibility of experiencing ecstatic living. I just feel that when I say the beloved opponent, he's saying, come on, this could be so much more. It's not about destruction of anything. It's about bringing us back to our real senses, if you like, our ability to be fully present and grounded in the luxury of being truly embodied without, I guess, if you're fully present, things just don't disappear or don't, you know.
And it's like you have that experience, even if it's like a sensual experience that is, you know, it's felt in the moment, and that yes. You recall in the future, or anticipate or recall from the past. It's like it's still a very grounding, shall we say, experience in the moment of being in a very sensual, whether it's a food experience, whether it's a sexual experience we've just purchased and the shopper's high, you know what I mean? It's like it can be so fleshed out so much more than we tend to, I think, because I think we tend to kind of skip over too much.
Take it for granted. The beauty of just sitting here in my room looking at little colours of the salt lamp and a photograph and a little plant there and the colours. And how often do we sink back into just being fully here and appreciating, like you do if you go to a full Panasonic movie, you know, and you see like Avatar or something, you know, made to appreciate because of the way of it's produced. The ecstasy, if you like, of colour and sound, and we have to be fully present to know that we are the ones, not just creating with our mind, but mind as a focusing tool, can bring what the heart desires. Many of us don't have really a clue what we really want because we don't know what's available. And because this world is like Avatar, you never know what more you can imagine and create.
Oh, I know this one well, because I actually have a real experience of having always been like that, really. I've always just appreciated things around me, very simple things, just observing some beautiful things or tasting whatever. Maybe taste was the less one because I've been a bit overindulgent in my food. I heard this funny one recently. You know, when you're getting older, when you start looking at what birds are doing.
Yes. I'd been several months and I hadn't been out in my garden at all. It's a little courtyard garden, but it's very lovely. And I sat on this chair, which was pushed right up into a bush. And I was so close to watching the little buds and the leaves and the creatures. And I must have sat there for an hour just looking at one little leaf and the little movements and of the little insect. And it's like, wow. Just turning down the dimmer switch so you can go into the next level. And you could spend hours just looking at a cloud or watching the patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess this for me would be real luxury. And where they often go on about doing gratitude journals. Well, it's a bit gross really, but it's okay because it's a way of making the mind stop and appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
But the actual act of appreciating, like I'm talking about that moment in the garden.
You know, for me, it's also like not a case of trying to figure out, oh, I need to figure out what it is I want. I don't know what I want. For me, actually, it's like you say, you just appreciate what you have in the moment. And that itself opens up doorways. Because if you're in that state of appreciation, it's like just more and more comes for you to appreciate.
Exactly. And why? Putting your house in order and maybe even just tidying a drawer or just ranging things like kids do. They love to put things in order, tidy. And you can see how the just so-ness of having all your six matching forks all lined up and, you know, playing house really.
Mm.
And how being in the moment is the ultimate, for me, I sense this must be the ultimate luxury, the detail, the tiniest little details. And I think of Taurus rather like that. You have to be really grounded and present and to experience the exquisite nature of being in a body, being embodied. And taste has to be like that. Looking at the different tastes of things, you know, and if you're a real connoisseur of food or wine or whatever it is, you can appreciate just by stepping back and being present.
Another one that I've noticed with Taurus, especially because it is an earth sign, so there's a correlation with the sense of smell. I've noticed, meeting Taurians, that they have an appreciation for the fine things in life, but especially smells.
Yes.
Is that kind of like, there's that sense as well. And when you think about it, the most obvious expression that encapsulates all of the senses is sex.
Yes.
You know, and that obviously with Rahu involved can lead to extremes itself.
And that I've always seen for many, many years that the highest form is what I've heard from within as well. The highest form of expression has to be that ecstatic encounter with another, with the beloved in another form. And yeah, that has to be the most exquisite experience.
I mean, there's nothing like it really when you think about it. You can't compare it to eating cake. You can't compare it to, you know, smelling a rose. You know, it's like it just encapsulates every single sense in the most intense way, leading to that like crescendo of orgasm.
Yes, absolutely. And then that kind of total surrender that, oh, wow, yeah.
But of course, if we talk about Rahu in this context, I mean, you know, I've seen that quite a bit as well in my own behavior as well in the past, of just excess, you know, and excess itself leading to less, or the sense of less, you know, it's kind of like dulling it. the impulse, because the more you get, the more you want, and the more you get, just snowballs.
That's the Rahu balance, being on the point, the tip of the sword as it just touches it. That's it. And Rahu will pull you out if you go out of balance. He told me once, 1 millimeter, one Ian hair's breadth out of true, and you're lost. You have to dance on the razor's edge, he said. Dance on the razor's edge. A lot of words, they have a taste and a quality and a feeling. Well, probably the vibrational nature as well. And I'm very fussy about looking at the etymology of words when I can feel it's not quite exactly the perfection that I want. Of course, they're frequencies, aren't they? So.
But that, in the context of, say, I don't want to go on and on about sex. It's an important aspect of life for sure, but this concept that, the state that you're in at the time and engaging with another being, obviously, it's all reminding you of that, state of the opposites coming together, the polarity and all of that, and that kind of explosive moment. But it's kind of like any engagement when you think about it, any engagement with the feel of a nice fabric on your skin, or the whatever it is, whatever sensual experience it is, how it can bring you instantly into the moment, but then how it could also be this, I want that again and again and again and again, another hit. And then all of a sudden you're like addicted to it.
This is why I love the word Kehala, that spontaneous whim or fancy of the heart, that impulse, that the little breeze, and surrendering to that dance. Yet you can't just be a little leaf in the wind. So it's a question of getting it all into balance, isn't it? To have the perfect, to be ready. That phrase I used all years ago, and it just said, "Are you ready? Are you ready?" And I go, "Ready, ready for what?" I'm talking about years ago, and yet to encounter what we might call another, which is ourself in another form, you have to be ready to have this exquisite tantric experience, the ecstasy. You have to be ready, and all we have to do is not do anything, is be ready for the breeze to blow. Just be ready.
I'm just reminded though as well of what my astrology teacher used to always say about Rahu, and how when we have that experience in a cycle of Rahu, whatever, in a period of Rahu, where you really have to go there. Like if it's like you have to eat chocolate cake, you have to eat the whole cake before you can move beyond it. It's like you can't have a little bit of chocolate cake, because there's always this that kind of like, oh, I could have a bit more, I could have a bit more, and then you leave it aside, but that's all you think about for the rest of the day. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well,
It's
yes, it does. If we're not ready to just have that one mouthful and fully appreciate it in that moment, you don't want any more because you're full already from that one mouthful. And that's what we are, I sense, in the chaos in the world at the moment, we're being led to make these choices. So before we begin to engage with the chocolate cake, are you fully ready to experience it ecstatically and be full? I mean, let's say you've really dissolved into the most fabulous orgasm. You're not going to immediately want another one. It's time to rest. Even if it's gone on for hours, you don't really want to engage in the whole cycle again immediately.
That brings up a kind of an obvious next question then, because this whole the other side of Rahu is always this sort of it's not the thing anyway. It's not about the cake, it's not about the sex, it's not about the anything. It's just about the experience, that or the striving for that thing, that is like the ultimate peak experience, right?
That's right. And it's the striving that has to be let go of, because you're out, if you're striving, you're into the desire as a strategic getting, grasping, rather than desire as a spontaneous allowing of the seed of that experience to grow. It's the difference between desire as an allowing or a grasping.
That is such an important point that I think I need to hear over and over again. I'm sure people who are listening need to hear this over and over again. Like even in astrology, the language is they are grahas, they are graspers, they
They're
grab.
graspers, and they are graspers or grahas at one level. But when you transcend that first level of imprinting to what is the more of you, then they aren't graspers. They are revealers. They are sharers. They are places in which they're filters to give you a different experience. And as we as human beings get to the choice, to the moment of choosing, that sense of completion and satisfaction, like I just described in you finish, you're resting after this a fabulous orgasm, or you've eaten a raspberry fully. Are you fully present in that one raspberry? Like C.S. Lewis was saying in that Journey to Perelandra, you pick that first fruit, and if you fully allow that starburst in your mouth, and you're filled with that, you don't want any more. There's no wanting, there's no desire. It's that very important question. Tell me what you really want. Tell me what you really desire. Tell me what experience you wish to have next. And mostly we're like leaves in the wind, at least at the beginning of life anyway. We don't know.
I'm just thinking about how such a fragmented mind could just be constantly grasping and constantly like being bombarded with things that you want, like advertisement. You need this, you need this, you need this. And it's like often, well, all the time, I would say, in that fragmented state, you're constantly grasping, desiring in that grasping kind of way something.
Because reaching for circumstances rather than simply allowing the, let's call it love, I don't write that word, but I can't think of any other, the essence of what we really are. When we think about what we really, really are, when we reflect on that and allow that to simply express through us, this has to be the richness of Taurus, the absolute presence. And how could there be anything richer than that?
It's like I'm going to again use the example of sex, but I mean it's just what I'm thinking about right now. But it's kind of like the difference between my mental fixation on I need to have it or I need to, because some images flashed into my mind or I see an image versus really feeling fully what my body needs. And when I feel into what my body needs, sex is a very natural thing that happens in cycles, it seems. I even can correlate it with the moon cycles, but apart from that, I don't even have to do that. I can sense into when my body needs a release or something, as opposed to my mind, which is constantly going to be grabbing, grasping for the next thrill, right?
And the new human that we are birthing collectively, the new global, is obviously going to be of that level of mastery or that level of majesty that is simply able to know and allow the fullness, the satisfaction in every moment. I remember years ago when I used to sit and ask about, oh, I don't know, conscious creation or allowing or whatever. And it said to me, the one thing for sure, you are to be satisfied. Be satisfied. And so it's not satisfaction as a putting up with, making do. On the contrary, real satisfaction is that, like we used ex the example of resting after orgasm, after a really complete, delicious experience. And that is true satisfaction, where the breeze even stops blowing for a moment. There's just stillness. Like the end of that poem I wrote down, my hologram. And Mahadevi takes on all these forms. And the final one is to rest in perfect silent formlessness, moving in and out of form. But we are not living a sequential life. We're not living a linear life. It seems to be that is our experience in order to live in the game of duality. But we are not. We are full spectrum. We are the silent formlessness, and from where everything comes. And this is what we are becoming We are in the process of knowing that's what we are and allowing it to become. I mean, for me, it's easier to see and feel the vision than actually experience it. Sometimes I think, you know, like I was telling you at the beginning of today, that there's a sense of delicious satisfaction in seeing order, in laying a kitchen drawer out with five forks or six forks all in a row, you know, tidy. It's a lovely feeling of being ready for the next banquet.
Yes, that I get that. I understand that. And that you can definitely correlate that with Rahu in Taurus, even, because there's this concept as well in Indian astrology, and the drishti of sight. And so anything that planets look at, they have a desire for. So the special aspects, they call them in astrology. So Rahu is said to aspect the fifth and the ninth from it. So in Taurus, it would look at Virgo, the orderly Virgo, you know, and Capricorn, and it would want that kind of systematic, sort of orderly kind of thing. Because let's face it, it is nicer to look at a tidy room. It is nicer to have sort of like order and not chaos.
But there has to be a little bit of disorder as well, like that speck. Like you have to eat a speck of dirt every day, so the Vedas. Because you want a little tiny, there's something perfect when there's a little teeny.
No, but let's take that out and blow that out into more extremes, because let's face it, we're talking about Rahu here, and I'm sure there's a lot more extremes we could talk about other than what we're talking about here in sex and food. But let's say, you know, that what about someone who just actually, not consciously, but really enjoys all of the ickiness and all the problems and all the obstacles, all the bondage that Rahu throws up, and actually in some level enjoys all of that, because then they
in a mess.
the mess, and then they enjoy the relief of that when it's gone, when the bondage is released, when the room has been tidied. I'll just let it get so messy, but then when it's tidy, oh, I love that.
You know, like when you watch children putting things in order, you know, sort the little boy sorting out his Lego, make a beautiful creation, then knock it all down and make a mess, because they love it. They love both.
But what about people who make a mess of their lives? Like I'm talking about their relationships, their finances. They're just like, they're addicted. They are falling apart. And it's like that's some part of them, that Rahu part of them, we might say, or what it might reflect in them, that actually loves that, because they love that getting it back.
Yes, well. And I mean.
And well, I mean, this is the thing, because this is what I would be listening to a lot of the time when I do readings, of people who are in the maelstrom.
And they don't want to be there.
And they consciously don't want to be there.
But the unconscious, well, then that's the Rahu bit, pulling them back to being what and who they really are, that poise of the point of the sword, absolutely pinpointing, being present. And they will have to go on experiencing the interruption from the unconscious that they apparently consciously don't want, until they settle and bring it all to the heart, where disorder and chaos doesn't actually exist. I mean, because that something is in disorder is a judgment anyway. I mean, you look at nature, and you could say nature, you go into a wood and you see everything's all over the place, or it's not in tidy rows like we put into gardens. That's why it's nice to have, I mean, nature will automatically disarrange something, because it loves order, but it loves the spontaneity. And I love that word, keala, spontaneous whim or fancy. And that also is part of the perfection of everything.
Because let's face it, if you are waiting for that perfect sunset or that perfect meal or that perfect whatever, yeah, you might in that experience of it call it that. But obviously, if you then objectify it perhaps after, or, you know, there's always something. You could always find some fault with something.
If you go into mind on its own, not rooted in the heart, then yes, you will find it as like a disharmony. But Rahu says, the dissonance at the furthermost reaches of the infinite resonance. And we dissonant notes in a symphony are also part of it. It loves it all, you know. If we can sit back and somehow enjoy it all without judgment, that's what the Great Way says. The Great Way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. It doesn't mean don't prefer chocolate or pudding over lemon cheesecake, but you can't have no choice. Choice isn't necessarily preference, but it's like you have to be, you have to enjoy it all. The breaking of the beautiful tower that has been built out of the Lego and the sheer mischievous delight in collapsing it all and to start again.
But there is, I mean, I'm reminded of an experience I had recently. I went to Spain for a week recently, and just to be in the sun and just to watch the sunrise, and I'd be sitting there on the beach as the sun was rising and looking overhead, and there was the moon and Venus were coming together. And it was just so awe-inspiring that you're just captivated by that. And it's kind of like those kind of scenes come around now and again just to completely still you. But then, of course, I came out of it, and then I'm like looking around thinking, well, why isn't anyone else looking at this? You know, people are going about their day.
Because it was just for you, Gary, nobody else. It was just only for you.
But that is true, though. Of course it was, because it was like, from my perspective, that was just perfect in that moment. And that was just, I wouldn't even say like a profound, almost spiritual moment. I was just, the profundity of, when you haven't seen the sun for a while, especially, and when it rises and it shines on everything and just illuminates everything in that kind of way. It was just a perfect morning. You know, in that kind of perfect way, it just kind of just stops you in your tracks. The mind just stops.
You've slipped into the mystical moment where you haven't got really words except a bit of poetry. Perhaps you could make poetry about it.
Why can't we do that in just our everyday mundane tasks, where, you know, the curve of the onion peel on the chopping board and the, you know, whatever, right?
But yes, what we can, but if it were like that all the time, how would we notice? I mean, it's like playing hide and seek, isn't it? You get it fresh, new.
Mm.
And if you were watching a sunrise all the time, how would it be? We love the surprise and the keala, you know, that little spontaneous heartbeat, little impulse.
It's almost like we're just playing with this sort of hidden magic all the time that is just there under the surface, and it reveals itself now and then just to remind us and surprise us in a nice, pleasant way. But if we were just to see it, because oftentimes, obviously, a lot of people, I imagine, don't see it that much if you're not looking for it. Like I said, from a very young age, I've always had this sort of looking. I've always been looking for that kind of something that pleases the eye or whatever it is, and enjoy that.
It's when the mind is fully rooted in the heart, the mind is illumined and is able to delight. Like what's his name? Was it Thomas Aherne? He was out walking one morning and he comes across a pile of dog shit, and all of a sudden he sees it as a pile of diamonds and the sun shining, and I can't remember it. Was it in The Varieties of Religious Experience or something? But it's the most beautiful description of how he sees it transformed.
Mm.
Like the mind becomes an alchemist when it's rooted in the heart, and it transforms everything into gold.
Which just goes to show that you don't have to be in the south of Spain watching a sunrise on a perfect day to experience. You can be anywhere.
Look at your own hand now and look at the magic of all the little lines and cells, and look at, you know, the blood vessels, and that's all you have to do. And look at a fingernail, and look, even if it doesn't matter whether it's a baby's hand or it's old, it doesn't matter. It's like, wow, magic.
It's interesting that this conversation about Rahu and Taurus, which again is said to be exalted, I'm finding it very hard to give you the yes buts, because they just seem to be like, well,
and give it some more yes buts then.
I actually am finding it hard to come up with yes buts, to be honest, which is really telling, actually, that, you know, because again, it seemed to be in its like exalted position. So it's like, I guess the other side of that is that it's maybe always too much. Like I've said, I have literally read charts of people have had the extreme highs and lows, like multimillionaires and then lost it all. That's a kind of a typical example.
Yes.
Or
Well, that's why they want to come to you to see if there's a way out. But everybody always has the way out. At any moment, you go to the heart field, and a simple way just to place your hand there and see what the experience is of stopping and allowing the mind to be illumined by that. It's so simple, but it needs a little practice if you're not in the habit. If you're in the habit of thinking, you can get to that stage of ecstatic readiness for anything. You can just look at the wall. You can just look at the wall and see the sparkles of light in the wall, and your eyes can see just looking at a plain painted wall, which I'm looking at right now. If you look with the eyes of the heart, you can love it all, even a child's scribble drawing and a bit of dog poop.
you know what is striking me now really strongly is, you know how with in modern therapy settings, for addiction more especially, they're using magic mushrooms, psilocybin.
Yeah.
So, and I always wonder what that compound is doing to someone to actually get them off a drug or get them off whatever. And now I'm realizing that it may be just that. And by the way, mushrooms correlate with Rahu, interestingly, in astrology. But anyway, that's a whole other.
Yeah.
Taking psilocybin, I imagine, would be that sort of just bringing you into those states using a substance. You then notice the drawing of the child. You then notice whatever it is. But it would, I imagine, treat addiction because that's all it is. It's like addiction is this kind of completely grasping all the time.
That's it, grasping for circumstances, grasping for an experience when all you have to do is relax, or not even do, but just stop doing. And then you begin to notice the wonder. And then your mind begins to, it can begin to doodle. That's what the heart is doing, doodling, following the spontaneous whim. And you see how everything is magic. And then you become, it becomes more what you see as you see it. So it becomes more and more and more. And I suppose the way for a millionaire, billionaire who's just gone bankrupt is just to stop. And you know, I remember once playing with money magic for making some little videos. Take one coin and hold the coin, you know, a little pound coin or a little euro, and just keep looking and looking and looking and feeling and wondering at what it is, what it represents, and using it as a, well, like looking at a flame of a candle, and just keep looking and looking and looking. I suspect that this is the way that you allow the whole of creation of your mind to bring you whatever the heart desires. You know, it's just definitely an allowing of the heart to express through mind. Mind being the focusing tool, rather than grasping for something that your mind thinks it wants or needs. Because as we realize, we are it all. Everything is you outpictured, everything.
You know that I've changed recently from instead of grasping, I'm getting this more and more. And again, obviously your words are sinking in, and I didn't deliberately decide that, oh, one day I'm going to do this instead. So what I'm doing instead now is instead of like, if there's something I want, I would have done this in the past more so, where if there's something I want, I maybe have a vision board or keep that in my mind's eye and I really want to focus on the thing, and that's the grasping thing. But these days, all I do is I observe things that are enjoyable to observe. I'm not even doing it with the sense of I want this thing.
That's what I call keeping that state, the inner state of what I always call sunny inner weather. Ready, you're ready. That's the word ready. You're ready just to notice and play, living ecstatically all the time.
I just love it because it kind of really expresses what you've been expressing about the different ways we can use the word desire. And I
Yes.
seem to be now, again, I didn't make a conscious choice to do this. It's just something that's starting to happen. So I'm sure you've influenced this, but it's just this sense of just allow it, like a flowering of this thing. And I just enjoy the experience of observing this, or this thing is lovely to look at or whatever, instead of what I would have done previously, where it's like, I want to visualize and manifest this thing or whatever.
And that's a lot of efforting. And quite often we just can't be bothered to do the amount of mental gymnastics that we have to do to follow, well, the way some people share it, when it's simple. It's the simpler the better, and not doing anything at all in the question, in the way of using doing as an activity. I mean, yes, there's action, you move, and sometimes when you're following one of these threads in the inner, and there's a desire, it becomes so simple. It's already done. Everything that you possibly could want or could desire or could is already done and already happened, already finished in that first moment of that moment outside space time. But that you have to prove to yourself, you have to play. There's you, the originator, and then there's you, the receiver, and you, the all the archetypes are within you, are within us. It's so wonderful to sit down and say, all right, just games, playing. I'm going to be fairy godmother now, and then I'm going to be Cinderella, and I'm going to be, and it's just fun games. And how we can get bored, I don't know. I really don't know, because the magic is in any moment and anything you look at, whatever. It's only the judgment, as it says in the Great Way, make the smallest difference, and heaven and earth are set forever apart. Great Way is not difficult for those who have no preferences, meaning deep emotional insistence. Doesn't mean don't eat chocolate cake if you like it. That's a different kind of preference. But that sense, I can't be really happy because the menu doesn't have my best chocolate ganache cake that I want. It's we can love anything, and then we get to the point where it becomes simple and easy, like you see somebody coming and asking Nityananda for some gold or some money because he needs it. Nityananda goes and walks into the swamp and picks up this bag of gold and gives it to him, because it's obvious that everything is already in mind already. Only if you make the mind separate from the source of your love, expressing your everything, then yes, you can go into heaven or hell, as it was that exquisite ability to know the perfect color that I know now, I like, and the different shade of pink or different shade of red or whatever it is, and to know the precision. I never used to have that. That's probably because my mother used to buy me tan raincoats and things when I was a little girl, and I think, oh, I guess torn between the desire to please her and not knowing what my own choice was. So I must say it's evolved quite a way.
It's interesting because I we had a family dinner occasion recently, and we were all sitting at this big long table, and I ordered whatever I ordered, and I have this tendency to do this anyway, like have this food envy thing, where it doesn't matter what I order, it could be the best meal on the menu, and I'm looking at everyone else.
Everybody else, I understand. I understand. Do you know, I used to do that when I was young. I suppose I had a really peculiar upbringing anyway, but I used to look and see what everybody else was choosing to make sure that I didn't choose something that I didn't really want. And it was like not knowing what I wanted. I remember going, oh, I had a couple of lovely, they were two lovely gay young men, and we went round the lanes in Brighton, and I used to look at the way they would love this and love that, and I remember saying to them, how do you know what you want? How do you know what you like?
Maybe it's a gay thing then, because I remember when I was a kid and quite young, and I remember my aunt once bringing me to the shops and saying, "Now you can pick out anything you want." And I don't know if my mother was there, but so I think she was buying me a watch. That was it, and I chose a white watch, and they're all a bit surprised. Why does this little child want this really kind of bright white watch? It's like not the other dull looking ones. I knew I wanted this really bright watch. That kind of thing. I've always kind of looked at. It's almost like a peacock. Do you know what I mean? It's like you want the
Yes,
bright, flashy kind of.
it might be to do, because I've noticed the gay friends that I've had always have an eye, a really beautiful artistic eye for color and shape, and It's kind of an appreciation of the sensual nature of things and the beauty. Beauty, they've got really, maybe just the ones that I know. But
no, I definitely think there is a definitely appreciation of beauty. But of course, that can be taken to extremes, as we can see, you know, in the gay community, there's a huge, like, issue there, shall we say,
because I'm not very familiar with the gay community these days.
Well, it's like, you when you think about it, it's the love of beauty, of the form and beauty, you know. It's like when you get older, then it's this issue of, like, you know, what happens, you know. It's kind of like there's that issue. But the thing is, again, that when gay or not, like, when we have this appreciation of what is, like, beautiful or refined, shall we say, like, you know.
Yes, that just, you can use that word, refined, in Taurus. It's the refinement.
The refinement, yeah. I've always had that sense of, like, I need, like, in another way, like, any kind of vulgarity or bad manners or anything like that really offends me. Like, it's extreme, and I know that is something to look at, because it's like, why am I so offended by someone just spitting in front of me on the street? Do you know what I mean? What, like, they should be able to do what they want, but I get so offended that they're being so vulgar.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's like, what's that all about? Yeah, it's like not wanting anything to be. It's a very Venusian thing, right? Because I was born with Venus rising, so I have this kind of Venusian thing going on. And I feel like anything that disturbs that at all, it's like it's an affront to me.
Right.
Bad manners, bad behavior. Right. It's like it's not on. So anyway, that's a whole other thing we can talk
about. You'll have that Mahapurusha yoga then with the...
Well, actually, I don't have it, because no, it only can happen when Venus is in its own sign or exalted.
Already, yeah. Okay.
But at any rate, I still have that refinement, that kind of, you know, that need for, I mean, I love comforts and pleasure, and, you know, I do tend to enjoy myself, right? And I think that's also why, just simply, I can, you put me anywhere and I'll find something to see that's enjoyable.
You see, it's already happening, Gary. All of it is all there. Just settling into it, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just settling into it, I think. And I think with the Rahu, you know, it's about having been through the journey of Rahu Dasha now, I kind of realized that I didn't go to any extreme. Like, I don't think so. I mean, I'm somewhat extreme, but I definitely feel like I'm settling now. And the things that you say about just being present with that experience of tasting or whatever the experience, it's just naturally happening for me. I'm not forcing it now. I might have forced it before. So, oh, I have to see what this is about.
And then you miss when any effort... It's not just allowing. I mean, you can't orgasm with effort. You have to let go. You have to allow.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and that's the thing about, that's a very special word. One of my favorite words is the word desire, which can mean the exact opposite. From the stars, desidere, from the stars, which is already innate in you, in your essence, or it can be, let go of all desire, you know, the grasping sense of desire.
Well, let's...
Not many people talk about it being innate. Your desires are actually what you are, pack a little bundle of desires, seeds to grow.
Yeah, but the way you describe it, that just sounds more...
Well, it's more true to the word itself, desidere, from the stars.
Right.
It's what you incarnate with. And if you allow your natural tendencies to reach their fullness that you've incarnated with, and then yes, it has to be ecstatic, doesn't it?
I have to bring up a yes but. I think a big but. Now we're keeping on the sexual thing. It's a big but. It's a big yes but, and that is, what when somebody, and this, we're obviously bringing in Rahu and the shady character that is Rahu sometimes, our beloved opponent, our, what is it, illuminating dark lord, comes into this kind of dynamic and says, I want that, and I don't care what I have to do to get that, and even if it's a person, I'm going to get that person. I don't care what you have to say about it, actually. You know, you're mine. Let's go to extremes, right? What is that? Is that a desire, or is that some sort of distorted sense of desire? Because to me, what you're saying is that desire is a natural kind of unfoldment that would not in any way impede on someone else.
Okay, so if we look at desire as that taken to its ultimate, I'm going to get that, you're not in a state of being able to be ready to allow the acts, the ecstasy of experiencing, of being satisfied.
That is the crux of Rahu, the journey that we've been through with Rahu.
That's why I call him the beloved opponent, because he's opposing the conscious direction, because he knows that your true happiness is, which is every being is moving to expressing, true happiness cannot be obtained by grasping at a temporary thing, because everything you grasp at is only temporary. And when there's an allowing of the infinite nature of, I don't know, love, beauty, satisfaction, whatever you want to call it, none of the words do it justice, but they all comes from the nothing, the no-thing, spontaneously. And mind in the heart, rooted in the heart, is so amazing. It's awesome. It can imagine into form anything. Now, never mind whether you think you can allow that. We know that there are masters that have been, whether it's in legend or whatever, or in Star Trek, who can, because it's always going to have a new scratch on your car or your, you know, or you, something, you know, something is going to go wrong with that precious body. You have a appendix scar or you have this or that. It can't be, not in duality, but somehow I know in my heart that the magic of what I would call fairyland or heaven, let's call it heaven, and we are engaged in, or this being is engaged in bringing heaven to earth. There's a natural relaxing into allowing heaven or the divine or consciousness or life, whatever you want to call it, to gift itself with everything that it can possibly could be. And you're never going to run out, because there's always something else. There's always something else. Eternity is infinite, you know, so you're not going to run out. So the grasping and the insistence, whenever there's an insistence, I'm not going to be satisfied unless I have that. You're already cutting off your nose to spite your face, because you can't orgasm if you're insisting on having an orgasm. You know, that tightness, and you're not going to happen. Create anything. You know, whatever you can imagine, it's possible. And there really is no fiction. Fiction is not. Fiction is what you've dreamed up, and then it will come into form at some point or other, either unconsciously or consciously. And we are in the process of giving birth to the fully conscious, if you could imagine such a thing, human. Well, I imagine what you might think a Christ or a Buddha could do, could dream. I mean, the idea is possible. Of an infinite creator in human form, or in a form like human beings. We can't imagine. I can remember thinking years ago, what would such a being be like? In one of my earlier poems, what would such a being be like? Someone that could just be like a blaze of glory, like a resurrected Christ, or I don't know, whatever.
I'm now recapturing that image in my mind of the sunrise with Venus and the moon overhead.
Yes, yes.
That kind of perfection. And also thinking about, like, with Rahu and Taurus and people who, in a relationship, whether it falls apart or the person dies, how even in that grief, that there is still that recapturing that, maybe with someone else, maybe not, you know?
But it's always there, because let's suppose your partner, that your best beloved that you've projected onto, and you haven't yet realized it's coming from within you. It's all within you. Even you have the most beautiful partner in the world, and that partner's body seems to disappear, die, whatever. It's not gone. It's not gone. It's never can be gone. And our realization has to become so that we can be satisfied. Even if temporarily our eyes, our physical eyes don't, or our senses don't touch physical body, I know, I've seen it so many times, of that being from somewhere able to recreate the molecules, like Yogananda had Sri Yukteswar appear to him, and he was solid. You could touch him like Mary Magdalene and Jesus. You know, it's I know these things. I've seen them on the inner planes, and I know they exist. And that when someone that you love dies, as long as you don't get stuck in thinking about it as the way that we, the default of humanity is, you continue to have that relationship with that being. Maybe as formless, maybe in some other form. I don't know. It's up to us to imagine what we want. But I tell you, anything that you want to imagine, you can have. You can have that experience. Because then nothing, no one's gone. Nobody dies. Nobody's born even, really. We're having a story. And nice, and we're getting better and better at it. Mm. That's the delight. It's like, oh, so you play with little things. Till you get to be the point of knowing, well, nobody's really dead.
So this brings me to the maybe the last point about Taurus and what it represents. And I think a big one for a lot of people, well, for everybody, is it correlates with family and values and how, well, you know, families instill values within us, you know, in us when we're young. So what with Rahu then, in terms of like everybody's got a story about their family, oh, my mother did this to me, or my father said this or did this, or they didn't do this or that, right? Yeah. And this sense of growing up with, well, you know, I was always taught, like, you know, you have to really work hard for money, whatever, you know, the typical kind of...
And then you have to undo it, don't you? That's what we spend our life undoing and realizing that all of the stories that we don't utterly adore and love, none of it is real. Remember that I think I've said this, there's a half a dozen little phrases which I have been taught over the years. Remember, it said, if you don't love it, it's not real. Meaning that you can take it to the heart and it appears in its rightful shape. I don't think I ever told you the story of Jacob and the angel, which I'll tell some other time, of how you demand that it appears in its rightful shape. You see a monster and you can put your foot down, your Royal Highness, stamp your foot, say, no, I demand you appear in your rightful shape. And the rightful shape would be a shape that would please your majesty, not the Medusa. So much about looking in mirrors and then looking in the mirror to see the Medusa. And
how interesting that you would bring up that myth, because of course that is tied to Taurus. And it's not so much the sign Taurus, but the constellations within Taurus. It's this Algol.
Medusa.
Yeah, the Medusa myth is linked to Algol. It's a star.
Linked to what?
Algol is the star, but
Yeah.
There's this whole myth linked to that in terms of the Medusa.
But that's the way that many people look at the circumstances of their life. So a billionaire that's doing is losing it because he's lost all his money, is because he's looking at a passing cloud rather than what the heart desires. And if you get skilled at this, really, honestly, I really encourage anybody that's listening to play with this. Mind will tell you it's a load of rubbish, but it's not. If you just put your hand on your heart and practice this with the tiniest little thing, from a lost key or a broken fingernail or an accident, doesn't matter what it is, you get skilled.
Or losing a million.
Losing millions. And then the next day or the next minute, another little impulse, a guy that's made, or a woman that's made a few billion, the ability to magic that into form is still there. The blueprint. And each of us have got blueprints which can be tweaked, but we can keep coming back to the blueprint. I mean, years ago, and I remember looking at something and it just said, just align to the blueprint. Of course, but 40, 50 years, I didn't really understand exactly, like I can explain more or less with increasing precision what the blueprint might be, what your blueprint might be. And if you don't absolutely love it with all of you, and there's a clarity, a simplicity, then it's not real and can fade so quickly.
Well, this is what astrology is for me. Astrology is the blueprint, but it's oftentimes that other people are reading our blueprints and misinterpreting.
Well, there aren't any other people, so there are bits.
I know, but at the same time, if you're not looking at your blueprint, but you're allowing other people to look at it, but you haven't really looked at it.
Yeah, that's right. If you haven't really integrated to say, okay, if I am responsible for my experience, I'm not consciously responsible for my experience. Some of it is coming up from the unconscious. And then most people will go, oh my God, look what's just happened. My husband has left me. I've crashed the car. I've got no money left. I've got cancer, whatever it might be. Instead of seeing that the experience of what you don't like is coming precisely for you to take it to the heart and get skilled at allowing the transformation. Get skilled at being the alchemist of your life. And anything you don't absolutely love and listen to and pay attention to is not real, and can only what you love is a true expression of the heart of love. Only what you love, whether it's a delicious spoonful of pistachio ice cream with chocolate on, or whether it's a silk gown or something. It doesn't matter what it is. But if you don't absolutely love it and learn and play with loving it into its more and more exquisite all the time, it's always more. And the end that is never ending, the never ending story in more and more deliciousness, is already a done deal. I really want to emphasize this. Everything that you love, just pay attention with getting more and more precise about what you really want to experience. And the number one thing is this sunny inner weather and the sense of satisfaction. I remember absolute deep relaxation when my being, God, 50 years ago, said, you will be satisfied, because it's impossible for a thought or an impulse that's gone out from source not to return to its origin. Because it's only it's only an illusion that it's gone out from its source and return, but it's an experience that was wanted. It is impossible, I'll say it advisedly, impossible for anything to not return, any thought not to return to source. And if you don't absolutely love it and you deliberately intend to allow it to come to rest in the heart field, you're going to learn very quickly. You're going to get the habit, the default of allowing your good or your pleasure, your Royal Highness's pleasure, to unfold. It's a knack.
So it seems to me that, I mean, the crux of what I'm getting from you is that, you know, and this long journey we've been on with Rahu through all the houses, it's like in all the areas of our life and all the signs and all of its expressions, it's like it comes down to this. It's that you either have to love it, or you can spend your time striving and striving and blocking the very thing that you love.
Yes. It's, I'll tell you, the what I've come to is, I suppose you might call it the lazy way or the easy way. If you don't love something, take it to the heart and watch it. Watch yourself get used to the default of it disappearing. Sooner or later it has to, because like that euphoric state, you know, my end is my beginning and my beginning is my end. It's all complete already, but we are here to experience it and to become more and more able to relax and allow what we don't love, what we don't want. And as simple as I don't know, opening a box of eggs and one of them is bad. We don't want bad eggs in our box of eggs. So we have, okay, I don't want that to happen again. Okay, so you imagine yourself laying down the law in your realm, your empire, that I don't get bad eggs. And bit by bit, as the more conscious we become, it just doesn't happen. You look at the number of times that you get, you yourself now get surprised or astonished by complications. It's less than it used to be.
Oh, yes. I mean, there's less surprises anyway.
Because you've settled. Because we settle as we explore consciously. That's why Atmavichara, or self-inquiry, is the way above everything. I mean, there's singing, chanting, there's making beautiful clothes. There's all sorts of ways of being an artist, a life artist. We are life artists.
Mm.
And we are making more and more beautiful expressions, allowing the four yogic flowers to grow, fulfillment of your purpose. What's the purpose? Is to wake up and have a good time and enjoy this story world. And then there's artha, all the things that you want and enjoy and give you pleasure. And then there's the kama, the pleasure. And then there's the moksha, liberation from any thought that any circumstance could possibly do anything to me that I haven't chosen.
Mm.
And yet, of course, at the beginning of the journey, we don't have that experience, except maybe in some areas that we've been gifted with the seeds of true desire, allowing.
You know, I do want to say that I think that I'm benefited from the astrology in my life, in that I don't know that at this point in my life I would have got here without it. I mean, everybody has their own journey, right? And you've got where you've got in,
yes.
with your tools, right? With your life experience.
But I did love astrology, and I do still love it. I love seeing the fun of having, when you say something that implies that I was already playing with it, and I love it. It gives me feeling. Oh yeah, I let go of the map, so to speak.
But that's why I say you don't actually need astrology. Some people don't need astrology because they are living that. But some
then
people,
you can enjoy it. We don't need anything, Gary.
You don't need anything, but some people benefit from, because that's one sense I get from when I do readings. It's the one thing that people have in common when they have had their reading, is that they settle more into their life. There's this sense of confirmation.
They feel safer. They feel safe. And if a map makes you feel safe and you love it and enjoy it, the precision and the beauty of how it, all the stars and everything works together, it's mind-boggling. It's beautiful.
And also it's because there's so many things that if I did not have that awareness, I mean, I think I would have taken me a bit longer in my life to kind of come to terms with. But I quite instantaneously, when I observe it in the patterns in my map, I have this acceptance of it.
Yes.
So that's that is that sense of allowing. I it has given me that more and more in my life, and it's allowed me to move through my life. And having said that, people often assume that as an astrologer, I must be constantly looking at the astrology before I do anything or say anything. No, I don't actually. Actually, I don't have time to look at my own astrology. I'm looking at others all the time. But I actually move more intuitively through my life and feel through it more, actually. And I use the astrology, you know, it's kind of like almost in hindsight, like I'm wanting to understand what happened there, maybe more. I do
yes.
use it, obviously, because I know where the planets are always. So I kind of generally know, like when we went to Spain a couple of weeks ago, I knew where the moon was. I knew the nakshatras it was visiting. I knew that they were pleasant ones. They were nice, conducive to a nice time. So I thought, well, if we're going to go away for a nice time, why don't we choose a nice time?
Maybe you choose a time that will be more conducive, you know, like choosing, but there's always knowing, the fun of knowing that you can, at any point when we are fully evolved, we can override.
Well, this is the next step I think I feel I'm at, and I'm at that kind of precipice now of like jumping off, where with astrology, the downside of it, the pitfall of it is that you cannot therefore enjoy it unless it's in this constellation or this and that is happening,
and,
right?
And surely the astrology gives you some set expectations.
And that's the other thing. Yeah, it does give you a set expectation for sure.
And we are about to launch ourselves as a species, as humanity, into the place beyond expectations.
Hmm.
I mean, yeah, playing with telling the lorry that's driving in front of you that is slowing you down, turn left here, please, and it turns. Or when we get over the next hill, the rain, please stop because we want to get out and have a picnic, and it stops. Those kind of things. That is fun to play with, to expand the neural pathways, because we are launching into beyond the stars.
That's important for an astrologer to hear, but also to listeners to hear, because obviously yes. people listening to this will mostly be following the astrology of it. That yes. it's important to recognize what Kishore is saying here, because as an astrologer, I can speak for that it can only take you so far, and then it doesn't, like, it's like, again, the map is not the terrain.
Exactly.
Right. And it's not the experience. You experience it, and you can have any experience and And you don't have to. And I used to meet astrologers in the early days where they couldn't step outside the house unless they've like decided what was going on,
Checked all of the
chosen the right time to head
yes.
off and all of that. Instead of, and it almost like GPS these days, you know, when you use a GPS, it's like
Yes.
you have no clue where you are.
Yes.
If you take the GPS away, like I don't know where to go. I actually don't know. Is it the right turn or the left turn again? Right? It kind of almost takes that instinctual sort of way of knowing where to move through life away. So I'm just saying, obviously, that's coming from astrologer, but I'm just saying that as in there is a balance that you can achieve with astrology too, because it's allowed me to be more who I am, to allow myself to be. And that has actually allowed me to move through life with more ease.
Yes,
So.
I think it's amazing, and it's such fun. The, now and again, when you say something, and I go, "Yes, I'm experiencing that," and I look at the flavor of what I'm experiencing at the moment that I started off with, that they're saying, I feel more satisfaction, more order, more beauty, more. And as we go on looking at Taurus and our in Taurus, it's like that. And Rahu, this is the thing about Rahu. Rahu is simply there, like a mother lioness, cuffing her cub so that he doesn't make a little mistake and it goes the way that she knows that you'll get the next meal or whatever it is that she wants them to do. And Rahu is the beloved opponent. He seems to be opposing your conscious direction, but we are not just conscious beings. We have the huge spaciousness of nothing from which we can find anything and anything in between. And that to play, look, Mum, no hands. I'm riding my bike with no hands. It's fun to play with like that. It's also fun to see how precise it is to look at the beautiful maps we have around us. You know, stars and nature, the way nature does things, and you go, oh yeah, I see how, you know, like someone was asking the other day about why writing freehand with your pen and notebook, it feels more like a magic than doing it on a computer. Well, it isn't for everybody, but yes, the cursive, the curves, and like nature likes curves. And it's more natural. Doesn't mean that doing click, click, click on the computer is wrong. It's a different experience. And it's for us to just notice the difference and see what the preference is in any moment. You know? It's, life is awesome. And I'm endlessly curious about all of it, shape-shifting especially.
Well,
Shape-shifting.
we have shape-shifted. This is my way of segmenting back into the
Back
proper
into
back.
time to stop.
Well, back into the maybe the to wrap this up because it has been quite a journey, I think. And I just wanted to say, Kishori, that I've really enjoyed it with you, and it was actually nice to finish on Taurus, which is all about enjoyments. And it has been
Yes.
though the whole journey, and that's in a way the truest lesson here is that it doesn't matter what shade of Rahu we're talking about; it all comes down to the same thing, really. And I feel like that, well, there's many kind of things I could say, but I guess it's just loving it into existence. It's just loving what is.
Exactly, loving it all and getting the knack of loving what seems to be the opposite, this union of opposites that in the Hermetic philosophy, that loving what seems to be not lovable, loving the unlovable until it becomes simply consciousness, simply lovableness.
Absolutely lovely. That is as good a place as any to leave it for now, because myself and Kishori will be back with another series, a continuation of our maps of consciousness. This time, though, looking at the 27 wives of the moon, the 27 lunar mansions or nakshatras. So I hope you can join us for that series up soon. And in the meantime, thank you so much for listening to this all the way through to the end, whether it's this particular episode or the whole series. I hope you got something out of it. And if you'd like to continue the conversation with Kishori, you can find her at magicmakeover.com. That's magic with a K, magick-over.com. timelineastrology.com. My own website here is timelineastrology.com, or you can find me on patreon.com/timelineastrology, where I write daily posts. Again, thank you so much for listening to this. Until next time.